Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Deirdre O'Kane podcast with SJ and Eva B. And thank you so much to so many people who have subscribed and followed us and liked us. It's much appreciated, and please continue to spread the word and the love.
Nice bed.
My bed.
Bed's beautiful.
Fucking know it is.
Look at that headboard. Jesus Christ.
Bed.
Is that velvet?
This is velvet. It's absolutely beautiful.
Fucking hell.
We splashed out on the bed.
You bought everything, did you?
Well, yeah, the place is unfurnished.
Oh, Eva, it's stunning.
Yeah, it's stunning.
Oh, hi, girls.
Oh, my God. Look at that bed, Dee. Look at her new bed.
I'm looking. It's divine.
Divine, isn't it?
Jesus Christ.
Absolutely beautiful. Love, love.
I love the little corner of the side. Like, it's really, you can hold on to it, right? Like a corner.
Oh, my God. For my exercising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exercising.
It is fabulous.
It's about as much exercise as any of us are getting at the moment.
It's a disgrace. It's actually a disgrace. It is a disgrace.
I'm doing nothing.
Like, and since Lewis has stopped going to school, I don't even get to walk him up the hill to school. That was kind of my daily exercise, was walking him to school and back. And I don't even have that anymore. It's a disgrace.
Well, you'll have it soon once you get to September.
Can't wait to get that walk back in. Terrible, isn't it?
Down to the sea. You'll have the walk down to the sea with Dee.
Walk down to the sea. Get into the sea.
But yeah. I need to do more than the walking now. The muscle tone is gone, lads. Oh, yeah. He really hit that. Yeah. Looking at the body going, here.
You have to be doing weights for bone density.
Got to start the weights. Yeah,
I'm all about the weights. Yeah.
But what are you going to do? Are you going to do them by yourself? Are you going to try and go to a gym?
I think there's a gym in this place I can go down, and they'll probably have weights there. That's all.
See, if there's a gym in the place in your building, you will go down.
I will go down for sure. I will use it.
That's really good.
I thought the threat of having to get into a swimsuit on the job would be enough of a reason to get my ass into shape, and it lasted about 2 weeks, and I just stopped to Dublin, and I didn't do a fucking thing.
Isn't that amazing, Eva? Because I'm the same. Like, we have tele jobs upon us, and you know, psychologically, a lot of people will be looking at me. This is the time for me to drop the extra poundage. Now, you've no extra poundage, but I always think, oh, that's it, I'm flying. It's going to go now.
If anything was going to make me get into shape, would be that. And it still didn't. I was still on the cosy going, oh, Jesus, I should have been doing the weights. Instead, I was eating crisps 2 days before and drinking rosé.
I know. It's just really hard. It's really hard.
Oh, I love life too much.
That's good. Exactly. And you know what? It doesn't matter.
And I realised, which I thought would help me get into the right mindset, I will never be that person who looks forward to exercising. I have to stop waiting for that feeling to come on me in the morning. Oh, yes, let's get up in it. That will never happen. I'm just not that person. So it'll always be a battle. That means I have to accept it'll be a battle, and I have to fight the fight. But that still doesn't work.
I know. And the thing is, I find the summers particularly hard. When everybody's off school, the kids are off school. My time is really precious. So I'm like,
precious.
Okay, really? I can't be going to a gym now or exercising now. And if it's a sunny day, well, forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll walk and, I'll move a lot. I'm not going to be lifting weights. So I don't know. We're doomed, I think, lads, to be honest with you. At least you two are skinny bitches.
No, but it's not about fat.
It's not at all.
It's about feeling creaky, sore, and old. And then,
oh,
and
no, I know.
Muscle loss becomes sagging.
So it's does.
Right. It's this. It's everything just starts to sag. We all.
And lads, you know, I'm a little bit ahead of the two of you, and I'm telling you, you're going to get a shock.
Yeah.
That's coming. Yeah. The next 5 years is like, whoa, my God.
Yeah.
The old collagen, you know what happens to the collagen, don't you? From the age of 45 to 50, it drops by about 70%.
Oh, yeah. I got to horse that into me in the morning. Yeah. So maybe I will. Do you do that?
Why not? Yeah. I do all kinds of things. I mean, I did a lot recently. I did a treatment called Axillus, which is like a heat treatment all over your face and neck that's meant to stimulate the collagen.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't, it takes a long time to see the results. Yeah. So I've done like six of them. I looked lovely after them because my face was lovely and red and I just looked like I'd been out in the sun for an hour.
It lasts then?
I'd say you need to be doing it every year fairly regularly, and it's pricey.
Yeah,
it's pricey, but I do, you know what, if I look better by Christmas and I feel like I look fresh, I'll keep doing it. I'll find a way. I'll stop buying clothes and I'll just save the face instead.
Let's check in with each other at Christmas though and see how we're doing.
So Eva's in a new house and SJ is moving house today.
Yeah, in an hour and a half.
It's meant to be one of the most stressful things in your life, but I think you've done all the stress part.
Yeah, I'm just happy. I just can't wait to get into our own space and hang up my clothes. It's just the simple things of just putting your knickers in a drawer and this place, you know, they have these new apps, you know, electricity apps and parking apps and all these different apps that I need to have set up on my phone because it's all done. Like we're not going to get an electricity bill. We just top up our electricity on the phone. But there's an issue because my phone is a Spanish phone, so they're not accepting my region. So suddenly there's all these things that I'm like, okay. But
they won't leave you without the electric now.
They won't leave you without the electric.
I won't be running up with a bit of gas.
But isn't it funny though how times have changed? And you know, now like before it was like, transferring the name onto the utility bill, and so I also need a utility bill to set up a bank account, but I'm not going to have a name on the utility bill. So it's all these new changes because of how people live and it's just different. It's always,
and you know what as well, the bureaucracy has gotten worse. Sure. I think the paperwork and the bureaucracy has just come on. Everybody thought, oh, with computers and the internet and apps, it'll become easier and everything will be easier in your banking and everything will be easier. I just find it a minefield of forms. Yeah. Are you the same?
No, I haven't found that here yet.
But you're good at that stuff anyway. I'm like really Mrs. Inefficient and you're the opposite.
But it's so far, no, I haven't. And people have been quite warm and welcoming, you know, at the bank and everything in terms of what we need to set up a bank account. Just very simple things, but they're all linked to having a house, you know, and also you just feel very fortunate. There's so many people out there, like when I go into the bank, you think how hard things are for people who don't have anything, who don't have a bank account and don't have a house and have no way of getting a house. And, you know, it's just built to fucking keep people down. I just think, anyway.
It is. And that's a part of what I mean about the bureaucracy and what you need to get yourself settled somewhere. They ask for so much.
They do. Are you loving being in the new house?
I adore it.
Oh,
lads, we have a garden. I can't tell you that we just don't have to go to the park every day.
Going to the park is torture. I know it's a tradition in England. It's not here, you see.
Yeah, well, it's It is, yeah, I guess it is. Maybe it's because a lot of people in London in particular don't have gardens.
No, it is that. It's a little bit, happens a little bit more here because we have an apartment culture now, but nothing compared to the apartment culture in London is, you've been there for eons and it's still new to us. So parks are, you know, they're not a thing. But I always remember when I was there, yeah, it was the park. It was the park. Yeah. So a garden is glorious when your kids are your ages.
We have apple trees and pear trees.
Wow.
And apples and
Wait till they start falling and you'll be picking them up for hours and going, what'll I do with the apples? I can see you making the jam now. Yeah. Oh, jam, apple for jam for Christmas from Eva. Yes. We're all getting our applesauce for Christmas from Eva's applesauce with little labels on the jars. And I can just see you doing it. That's not going to happen. That's much better. You just keep on being a film star, love. You don't need to make applesauce for Christmas.
Free jam.
Speaking of your film starring, where are you? Where are you? Halfway through your shoot?
Oh, not even, darling. Not even. We're only 4 or 5 weeks in. We're on it till January. So we've got.
Oh my God! Didn't realize you were till Jan. Wow.
We've only started, but it's all good. We're back from our Dublin stint, and we're back in the London for our studio stint. So we're here for a good number of weeks now before we go back over to Ireland again. It's going well. It's going good. Just great women at the forefront of this.
That's so lovely. It's so rare to do a job where the women are the leads.
Driving the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah. God, that's fantastic.
Fabulous.
Well done.
All good. All good.
Well, my work has kicked off in a big way now, lads.
Go on.
Yeah. Like, I've started waking in the middle of the night with the going over material, going over jokes. It's upon me, and it's such a shock to the system.
You have to clarify what it is you're doing, because I don't think everybody's
okay. Well, first and foremost, I have my first live shows back. So I have a show on the 23rd of August in Kilkenny. That might be the 24th, so I better check. That's the cat laughs before I promote something here on the wrong date. Anyway, it's anyone can Google cat laughs and you'll see the date, but I think it's the 24th actually. So that'll be my first gig, and it's an hour on my own, and it's a new show.
Yeah.
And then I'm in Galway Empire Stadium on the 27th, doing about a half an hour with Ardal O'Hanlon, and that's bigger because it's Empire Stadium. Even though our capacity will only be 500, I'm just like, I've already just, my head has just gone into the adrenaline is flowing, and that's it. Once the adrenaline goes, I start to wake in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Oh
my God. I actually have a knot in my stomach for you.
But on top of that, the telly gig, my Sky Show telly gig is starting on the 1st of September. And I'm also trying to perfect all of the monologues, 5 of those. And I want to test those out as well. So,
yeah, but it's not just your Sky Show. It is the Deirdre O'Kane Show.
Yeah, like if anything goes wrong, it's very much on me.
A lot of pressure.
Egg on face. Nowhere to hide. Nowhere to hide.
Yeah. Do you remember the last time you did a live show?
I did like one tiny one in the gap last summer. Remember we opened a little bit for like a month or something. Mm-hmm. I went into town and I tried out new stuff for like 20 minutes. It's not the same. For that time, I did a real, real gig, certainly 2 years.
Good grief.
So, yeah, I just, am I still funny? I don't know.
You are. Believe me.
Is the material good? The biggest difference is that I have nowhere to try out the material. So normally I'd run into town.
Yeah.
I just call up any one of the little clubs and say, can I pop in for 20 minutes and get up? And they're like, yeah, it's a lovely.
Yeah.
The system is very nice, you know, how it works.
Yeah, that's how it worked, that you could do that.
Yeah, you just run in somewhere and get up. And I can't do that. So this is the first time I'll ever be taking the guts of an hour of new material to a stage without an audience, without having really tried it.
Yeah, it's really hard. Yeah.
That's sort of like doing it without your dress rehearsal or your tech rehearsal in a normal play.
Yeah. Actually, I am telling a bit of a lie, because when I did the last one after the Dancing with the Stars, I wrote a show about that. And the deadline was upon me in like 5-6 weeks. And I just had no time. It wasn't written. At least this is written. I'm not feeling panicked that I have to write more jokes.
Yeah.
I'm kind of finessing it and trying to learn it.
Yes.
But the last time I was actually still writing it, oh my God, I was a basket case, an absolute basket case. And I really didn't have the time to just run in and get up. So I actually just had to go. I always remember the first one I did was a charity gig that PJ Gallagher was running in Dunleary, down at the theatre. And he said to me, "Dee, will you come and just come in and perform? Will you do like half an hour?" And I said, "Can I do more than half an hour if I need to? I don't actually know what I have." Yeah. Like, I don't know what length it is. I could be on the stage for 20 minutes and I could be on the stage for 50 minutes. I just don't know what it is. And mercifully, PJ is like just really relaxed and saying, "Just do what you want. Like, right. If it doesn't matter, if you go short, I'll just cover it. And if you go long, well, that suits me down to the ground." And off I went. And I always remember that feeling of walking out there going, "Please, God, let this be 40 minutes and not 20. Please. Please let me have more than I think I have." Yeah. And I did.
Oh, brilliant.
I'm feeling the nerves. Like,
I am too.
I don't do theatre because it's just like, I think I would suffer from stage fright. I absolutely would.
Would you, Eva? Did you ever do theatre?
I did it at the very beginning and I didn't have a great experience. It wasn't a good play. And it was, the whole thing was just really, really not a good experience. No, like tiny audiences, and it was a flop, basically. It was a flop. And that, I never got over it.
Mm.
Really?
I never got over it. And I never really did. And then I stupidly, this is what totally put the fear in me, because it was a ridiculous thing to do, considering I had, you know, just been working on TV and film and not doing theatre. I then thought, well, maybe it'd be good to dip my toe in and do... Do you know the 24-hour theatre?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. God, Eva, that was extreme.
Oh, my God.
I'll just explain to the listeners. You basically come together as a group and create and perform a play within 24 hours.
Yeah, and the writers have 12 hours to go off to hotel rooms around the place with their cast. They're given the cast, like sort of they choose their cast and they are named out of a hat. I don't know how they fight over it. But they get their cast. They go off, they write it, they have 12 hours to write a play, kind of in between 10 and sort of 15 minutes, write a play. They come back with
This was your second choice after the flop.
This is my second choice after the flop. They deliver the play to the cast, and then the cast have 12 hours to get it ready. I don't think it
was even that was the, was that the nail in the coffin?
That was the nail in the coffin when I was like in the toilet in the Old Vic being sick from all orifices. I'm so fucking terrified. Literally sweating, going, "Oh, what have I done? What have I done?" The Old Vic is a big theatre.
It is.
Yeah.
People or 750 people theatre. And they had big names like Rufus Sewell was in it. Jimmy Nesbitt was in it.
Gambon. Yeah. Do I hear Gambon?
The Welsh actor. Is his name completely?
Sheen.
Thank you.
Thrilled to be self.
How done. But these are like experienced theatre actors that have treaded the boards for a lot, you know, for many years. And I was literally crying in the Old Vic toilet going, "I've made a huge mistake." You have about a 4-minute technical rehearsal. And we got on, and you just like do like a speed of it just to walk it through. And I remember the director coming up to me at the end of it, called me to the front of the stage. And he went, "Eva," because he's at the back watching, "I can't actually hear you."
Oh God.
I really can't. I'm struggling to hear you. You're going
to
have to fill the theatre with your voice.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I can't do that. I've never filled a theatre with my voice. The theatre that was I did the flop in was a tiny, tiny theatre. I was like, I'm not trained for this.
Oh, my God.
the horrible dawning realisation of, oh, my God, I'm the wrong person for this job. I should not be here.
You're not the wrong person for that job. I mean, that's not just really simple technique that, of course, you can do. Yeah. It just takes a little bit of getting used to, like a couple of days.
For that job, because it was 24-hour theatre, I'd be fine.
There was no time,
I had the rehearsal period, the 4 weeks, getting back into training, fine. But this, I should not be here because we are on and, we're on in 2 hours.
In 2 hours. And how did it go? Did you fill the theatre?
I don't know. I had an out of body experience and not a very pleasurable one. It felt like I was completely removed from my body, and my body was doing like a weird kind of, you know, moving in a strange way across the stage, making noises while I was above it, looking down, going, horrendous, let it be over. And then it was over. And then I had the biggest adrenaline rush of my life. And I was like shaking all over, but absolutely high. Went up to the bar, downed some drink or another with another cast member. I just went, that was insane. Insane. The rush was amazing afterwards, but by God.
That's just relief. Like, just, it's not joy. It's not a high. Like, wow, I was fabulous. I brought them to tears. I made them howl with laughter. That's just, I'm alive.
I've walked over the stage without shitting myself in public.
That's all you can hope for, honest to goodness.
And that was the end of you in the theatre. That was
the end of me and theatre. So I have auditioned for it since, and sort of toyed with the idea of doing one or two things and then didn't. And now I think I actually, too much time has passed. And I don't think I would feel comfortable doing it at all.
I think if you were going to think about doing something, a small venue, just something small to step your toe in the water.
Yeah.
Would you consider? No. Well, let's just be fair about the fact that you don't need to. Because
that's true.
You're fine with your lovely telly breaks.
I know.
So that's good. But isn't it amazing, the fights? Can you remember what your biggest fight was on stage?
That was it.
Because that was yours. But do you have one, SJ?
There was one moment where I was standing on stage and I went, I can't remember my line.
Okay, this is the absolute horror. Yeah. This is the nightmares that I get.
And it was just this one moment, you know, and out of, you know, lots and lots of plays, there was just this one moment where I just suddenly had a very introspective moment where I thought, I can't remember my line. And I know everybody's looking at me and it's up to me to say it. But what felt like 10 minutes was actually only 10 seconds. But
did you get out of it?
I said the line, it came to me, and then it was, you know, and then I was back, you know, but it was a kind of an out of body experience. And I imagine that that's the sort of thing that can really throw people into a stage fright situation where it can come upon you the next night. But thankfully it didn't. It was just that one moment where I did have this little out of body experience, because I know of other people where it has become a thing. And I know of some actors that have had to stop acting because of it. And I feel like that must be the most upsetting and distressing thing, because it is a mental block. Mm-hmm. But thankfully it was simply just a moment of, oh, it's my line. Oh, shit.
Do you remember these moments as well? Do you ever have these moments when you're in the dressing room? You're not a lead in a play. When you're not in the lead, you can relax in between bits. So, you know, you're on at the beginning and you're not on for half an hour. So you go back to your dressing room. And the next thing. And the next thing, you hear the line that's just before you's, and you fucking sprint like Usain Bolt to that stage. You could scale a 6-foot wall with the fear that is upon you. You're just like, oh my God. I have moved from a dressing room to the stage, I'd say at Olympic speed. But my God, the heart failure.
That reminds me of a story that a good friend of ours, who will remain nameless just in case he doesn't want to, but he's not even an actor anymore, so it probably doesn't matter. But when he was an actor, they used to play this game. He did a lot of theatre. And I can't for the life of me remember the name of the game, but it was about something like, you know, pushing it to the call or whatever. So when you get your call to stage, you get your 10 minutes.
10 minutes to the stage. Yeah,
10, please.
Miss Burr Thistle, 10 minutes to the stage.
5 minutes.
I do miss the etiquette, lads.
Yeah. But they used to push it to see who could be not ready close enough to the call bit.
Okay, that must have been a really long run, and they were very bored.
Yeah, they were very bored. And there was quite a few of them. and it would be either they'd arrive with the, you know, they'd only be arriving when it's 5 minutes stage, 5 minutes stage. They weren't in costume, 5 minutes stage, 5 minutes stage. And our mutual friend pushed us the best, and he won because he pushed us so far. The 5 minutes to the stage call, he got into the shower. He got into the shower. So he then still had to get into his cosy and try to make the stage, which I think he did just.
That's hilarious.
But you know, something, I do understand the psychology of that. I mean, now the diehard professionals will be listening, going, that is out of control. Yeah. However, if you're in a long run, some people like say, take the West End and you do 12 months or even 2 years, people have have breakdowns.
Yes.
It's too long, like literally Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And it's a way of keeping themselves sane, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a way of just waking yourself up or something.
It is.
Like,
you know, you need to have the laugh. And actually, that's another fear, actually, is the fear, that you're going to laugh. Like, I'm a terrible corpser, corpser. And I have to speak to myself so hard, like, and I know the people that will trigger me. So I have to really work so hard to not let that person who knows I can make drummy corpse any second now, and I'm going to do it. And it's really scary. And there have been moments on stage, and I've with some of my closest friends in particular, who again will remain nameless, where
like, I think you should name them for the laughter. Go on.
It's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying.
But the terror is the trying to get back the control. Like, you're laughing really hard and you're trying to get through a scene, and all of your body is going, get back, get back, get back. Like, stop. You know, you're trying so hard to do the opposite of what your body and your brain wants to do. It's horrendous. Horrendous. I did a play with Old MacDonald, and we were in Bath, and actually it was the play of the now film that's been much ridiculed. They called it something else. The play is called Outside Mullingar, Wild Mountain Time, which I haven't seen. But the play version I really liked. It is wild.
Yeah.
But anyway, Owen and I had this long scene around a table, and it was hilarious. And the dialogue was very fast, like a tennis match across the table. But there was just a moment in it where we were gone every freaking time. And there was one day on stage, he was gone. And you know, when another person is gone, I went, and I couldn't control. I had to keep turning my back to because I'm meant to be getting upset. That was the upside was I was meant to be getting upset. So I had to make laughter look like pain, look like emotional upset, and my back was to the audience. But I was actually tortured. He said to me afterward, I could see the torture on your face as you were trying to get back. It was like, oh my fucking God, I'm gonna go in this big theater. Oh, geez.
Anyway,
the only, I mean, not that this makes it okay when you're in the moment of that, but an audience, it's like watching bloopers, isn't it? Like, they would actually love to see somebody on stage corpse, I think, because it would make, I think it would be really, really
it
funny.
Depends on the scene.
It depends on the scene, I suppose. But what an audience don't want to see, and I personally hate as well, because it's just like this piece at this end, is when you know an actor has forgotten their lines.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's horrible for everybody.
It's awful. I was at a play there, it's 2 years ago now, because it was before COVID hit. And one of the actors who was in the middle of a big scene just completely dried.
I haven't seen that for a long time.
He did go on for a couple of minutes. It wasn't just like, and he had to call for the line off stage. The other actor that he's acting opposite was trying to feed in the line sort of subtly, quietly,
and
hear it. And then he ended up having to call for it. And it's just in the audience, you are going,
cringing.
Oh, you're feeling so bad for him.
Yeah, well, that's like watching a comedian dying on stage. I mean, there's absolutely nothing worse. Oh, and that's why they call it dying on stage, because it's as bad as it can get it. On the laughter, just to get back to the laughter for 1 second, I did have one experience where I didn't recover. Wasn't a play though, thank God. It was a stand-up gig that I was doing in Edinburgh with Donal Beecher, who was amazing. This double hander, he was on a keyboard, playing a keyboard, while I played this cruise ship singer who sang nap songs. And he was very, very funny. And whatever happened, something went wrong. And we both went together and didn't recover. Didn't and couldn't recover. I actually got down on my knees. I got down in the end because we tried to bring it back so many times, like 10 times. And I kept apologizing to the audience. I said, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that we're just finding this funnier than you. I was like, well, it was just, what can I say? And in the end, I got down on my knees and my head went down the ground. I gave up.
But this is what I mean about audiences. Did they not love it?
Because it's, they so laugh.
When you know what? There were some people, here's the thing. There were some people who were crying with laughter. They were in an awful state watching us. But there was a couple of stony faces.
Oh, yeah.
There was also a couple of stony faces.
Yeah.
And that was hard. And I remember Patrick MacDonald, who's another comedian. He was in the audience. He was dying. I mean, he was laughing so hard. He just couldn't believe this was happening. But he afterwards, he said to me, I couldn't stop laughing at the stony faced people. I was just looking at them going, oh my God, this is a car crash of monumental proportion.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're off to do your show. And,
I am really looking forward to it. Like, I am actually dying to get back on stage. I have to say, I am. I need a bit of rock and roll in my life. God almighty, lad. Yeah. It's been two very insular years. Right. Need a bit of,
Yeah,
you do.
It would be very nice if we could open up soon. I'm finding my Sky show in the Olympia, you know, we should have like 1,000 people in the audience, and we're going to have 150.
Oh, God, I was going to ask.
That's really hard. There wasn't going to be, this is only for stand-up. Well, no, actually, any comedy show, you're relying on audience feedback. You're relying on hearing the laugh. So,
yeah.
With that small an audience in such a big space, how is that?
We're going to mic them, basically, which will help enormously. And they've changed the design to make it all look more intimate. Well, so you still get the scale of how beautiful the theatre is, but actually, I think most of the audience will be on the stage with us, and we've built it.
Very clever.
We've done very clever things. Stephen has.
He's
kind of across all of that, and they'll be mic'd. So, I mean, when it comes to the edit, the telly version, it'll be fabulous. You know, you can add, but on the night, you're right. Like, we've got to have laughter. Music, you can do. This is the difference. You can do music with actually no audience, but you cannot do stand up. But anyway, look, we just have to manage. And to be honest with you, at this stage, we've all had so little stage time. We'll take 150.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the feeling. And it's the 1st of September, a little bit. And we was hoping they might say 200, 250, but it might just go up a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen.
I got
to. Got to get it in the can. It's been postponed for probably 18 months. It's happening.
Speaking of having a bit of rock and roll in one's lives, we were at a party. We won't say whose, but we were at a party on Friday night, SJ, weren't we?
We were.
Hey, yeah.
I know.
Poor Dee couldn't come.
And this is not to rub it in your face. This is to discuss. Because it was the first time everybody in the room had been at a party in a very, very long time, for obvious reasons. So there was this amazing kind of energy, slightly frenetic energy.
Yeah.
in the room where people were sort of thinking the same thing, which is like, Jesus, we're out.
And like, we're out and we're dressed up and it was a fabulous party. And there was this feeling of, it was, that's what somebody said, it's like a post-war party now. It's nothing like, we can't claim that we've been through anything like that, but there was
through something monumental.
But we've been, we have, 100%. But we have, and there was this energy as soon as you walked into the room, and everyone looking beautiful, and it was just incredible.
And everybody able to hug and kiss each other because everyone's vaccinated. I presume that was the vibe.
It was mixed because... And I think that this probably changed through the course of the evening. But there was a mixed response.
Yeah.
And mixed behaviour from people. And I don't mean just in regards of how people greet each other to give a hug or a fist bump. But I think some people were very overwhelmed by the whole
thing. They were.
Like, we sort of just couldn't quite find their groove with it because it was just all a bit too much. And some of those people were really hunkered down over the last year and a half because they had it. And this was really their first time properly socializing. And it's that kind of a scale as well. So they found it very, very emotional. There's other people who were the other extreme, probably.
Yeah, like us, like ourselves.
And they were just so happy and not overwhelmed in all the right ways. Being very, very, too comfortable, perhaps. But it was really interesting. And some people that I was chatting to mentioned that they'd felt like they had lost all their social skills and were finding it really difficult just to have a chat, you know?
Yeah, so really, that's interesting.
Kind of mixture of emotions and...
Yeah, and people were being very kind and conscientious as well, that there was this acknowledgement that not everyone feels very comfortable. Like, I was very aware that I'd flown from America and back, and I'd done that twice since lockdown, and I've been back to Ireland twice. I had actually,
you've been on the move. Yeah.
I've been on the move, and I've
some people haven't and gotten on a bus.
Some people hadn't even gotten on a train to go into London.
Yeah.
And so this was the first event that they took public transport, and it's just the difference in people's experiences all kind of coming together at this one party that was fabulous and really monumental, as you say.
But it also made me, I was thinking then, like, COVID aside, how are your general social skills? How would you rate them? Are you both very good at just chit chat and filling airspace? And I'm not talking about people that you just go straight into proper conversations, but people that you don't know terribly well and those kind of social events, are you good at chit chat?
I have improved, but it's something I definitely had to work on. I used to be very, very bad. Mm-hmm. Only with people I don't know. I'm fine with people I know, but say I'm at a wedding and I don't know the groom side, or you're at an event where you're going, okay, I'm going to be mixing with a lot of people and there's small talk to be made. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I actually used to have fear and dread and go, I'm really shockingly bad at this. But I've learned from watching other people. I've kind of studied other people, and I realize, ask questions. Yeah. Ask questions about them.
Yeah.
Where do you come from? Where do you live? What do you do?
Yeah. But it's all very mood dependent as well, isn't it? Because it takes energy to do the small talk and to be or even feel.
Yeah, it's a skill. It's an absolute skill. I often look at the Royals when I was when Kate and William were over here. I was invited to meet them at a little soiree, and I had to watch the two of them doing the whole room and have a few words for like everybody. 200 people, different people. And I thought, well, that's you need a degree in that. That's like, my God, like, where do you begin? You know, and they were doing it. They were doing it. It was full of them. By the time they finished, I was full of admiration for the two of them. They smiled. They were gracious beyond. Yeah. And I just thought, that is my idea now of hell. Small talk around a room. some people they were really happy to meet, actors they recognized or knew from various things, and they go, oh, I know, I watch Game of Thrones, it's so nice to see you, bit of that, you know, that was fun. But then there was loads of people who were just
sure.
Yeah.
Now, do you see what I just nearly said there? Loads of ordinary people who weren't in Game of Thrones. You know, that's not what I mean. Just like where you're having to find out, who are you? What do you do?
About them. There's no, there's no starter point.
They've been learning, I'd say, all of their lives.
But it is part of their job.
It is their job.
It is their job. And so they've gotten very good at it. And I imagine when they go home, they put after the party.
They might kick their shoes.
Kick the shoes off and go. So who was the best person you spoke to now tonight? Who was the funniest?
And sometimes they'll be going, no one, no one. There wasn't one light in the fucking room.
Well, that brings me to my next question. Are you good at extricating yourself from a conversation when you see somebody that you do want to talk to across the side of the room and you don't want to be stood talking to the person that you don't know? Are you good at getting yourself out of the conversation?
Let you answer, Esther.
Yeah. The other night I found myself in a situation where I probably was the one that she was trying to extricate herself from.
Oh dear. I don't believe that.
But I think the reason is I took a risk.
You took a risk. You took a risk.
You asked her about anal sex.
I took a risk and I don't think it went very well.
Oh God. Are you going to tell us can you remember what the risk?
I was having a really fun chat with this woman. And then she was like, how is your week? And we were chit-chatting. And we were like, at this stage, I came out with this thing that I just learned. I was like, do you know what's happening in discos nowadays? That girls are actually, they're putting glitter in their vaginas. And then guys come out if they've snogged the girl. And if the guy has glitter on his finger, then you know it's game on. So
I took a risk. That's hilarious.
I took a risk, and
I'd love to know how you phrased that risk. Like, what did you come out with? Did you just say, do you know when you've got glitter on your finger?
Something like that. Then I'd see her later on in the night. I was like, hi.
Glitter on your finger.
Glitter on the fingers. but generally, I'm pretty good at extricating my own self from a situation, but in a nice way,
I know, but that's the thing. You never want to hurt somebody.
I'm not very good at it. So I end up there. I'm still there 45 minutes later going, oh, my pal's over there.
So you and my husband.
I'm really fucking polite. Like, as we've spoken about not being able to complain.
No, you're too polite, love. You let people scrub the skin off your,
off the legs.
Off your.
I'll be stuck in the corner going, I don't know how to not. I don't know how to.
You need to just like have five lines of, I'm so sorry, but I am actually desperate for the bathroom. I'm just going to get another drink. You need a few staples. Yeah, a few staples that are polite and easy and no one's going to be offended. Because like that, my husband, oh my God. We used to leave the odd event where I'd have a great night and he'd come out the door spitting like a lunatic. I was stuck. I got stuck for an hour and a half. And I'd just be like, Jesus, what is wrong with you, man? You've got to get out of these situations. I had a great night. I did the whole room or whatever. I had a laugh over there. I could see you having a laugh. And I was trying to give you a signal across the room to save me. But you're like, listen, I can't be saving you. I've done the saving. You've got to save yourself. It's every man for himself.
It's the wildebeest theory. I have a friend who came up, him and his pals. This is years and years ago. And they'd say, oh, it's the wildebeest. And you're standing in the bar and it's up to you to save yourself. And you see it coming in and he's looking for the prey and you have to scurry away. And if you get caught by the wildebeest, you're fucked. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Deirdre O'Kane podcast with me, SJ, and Eva B. This week's episode was called Beware of the Wildebeest. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is powered by the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.